As we listen to the story that the children heard earlier this morning about King Solomon and the demons, I expect some of us may have hoped to hear how to get rid of them, how to be free of those tormentors. That's not the gift that King Solomon shared with the master builder's son, though. The demons are still there at the end of the story. And they are still here in the world, and they are still here in our denomination now. The king's gift is, first of all, he believed the boy when he told about the demons. First of all, the king said, if he hears demons, there must be demons. The king did not say, they aren't keeping me awake, so they can't be very bad. Beyond that, though, Solomon lets the boy see how to transform the demons so that they are no longer his enemies. You can make the demons work for you, says the king. The boy worries about having no magic ring, so the king gives him a coin to remind him of the ring, but we know the coin is really to remind the master builder's son of his own power. Call on the demons to say their names. Talk to them. They can't run away from questions. In a congregation as diverse as a typical UU congregation, as diverse as this one, it can be intimidating to think about asking too many questions. What if we get answers we don't want to hear? What if we make somebody angry? What if we can't agree? You've heard by now, I hope, mention of a congregation-wide retreat that will be held this coming winter, where everybody will be asked to participate and consider our identity as Williamsburg Unitarian Universalists. Who are we? What are we here for? Who is our neighbor? We can't ask the board to define our identity. We can't charge a committee with finding it out. The work is valid only if the process is honored, only if the congregation participates. Will everybody agree? Chances are that we won't. Will somebody get angry? Chances are that they will. But we know how to make the demons work for us. We know how to call them to name themselves. We know the demons can't run away and hide from questions. We're not the only ones involved with the challenge of identity. Last month, Reverend Shirley and I told you a little bit about the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, which was this year in Fort Worth, Texas, back in June. In one of the plenary sessions, the Commission on Appraisal presented their report called Engaging Our Theological Diversity, and I recommend that one also. After a four-year study, this commission, made up of 9 people elected by the UUA, wrote about our need to understand and name our Unitarian Universalist identity. Some of the questions their report addresses are, what holds us together? Where do we come from? Who are we? To what do we aspire? How shall we serve? And let me also mention Reverend Rebecca Parker, president of Star King School of the Ministry, whose question is, what features of Unitarian Universalism, if you took them away, would leave us with something that is no longer Unitarian Universalism? We can also say, what features of Williamsburg UU, if we took them away, would leave us with something that is no longer Williamsburg UU? As a denomination, we don't have clear answers to these questions. Perhaps more importantly, as individual congregations, we aren't asking them. In order for us to be effective in the world, we have to stand for something. And too often our congregations tend to shy away from making declarative statements about what we stand for. It's not unusual to hear something like, there's so many of us. We believe so many things. How can we say this is what we stand for? On the other hand, say many UUs, how can we be useful in this stricken world if we can't say that? What does it mean to be a Unitarian Universalist. It has to mean something. Let's think for a moment in more specific, concrete terms. One of the workshops I attended at GA was offered by All Souls UU in Washington, D.C. There are lots of All Souls UUs, but this is the one in D.C. It's about growth, what made them grow, how they encouraged and embraced growth. And then we had small groups that we broke down into, and the one that I went to, we heard about their membership program. They created it, and first of all, they realized that membership in their congregation had to mean something. It had to have a meaning. And they had to be able to declare that meaning to potential members, people interested in joining. They now have four services per year that are called in-gatherings, and that's when new members sign the book as part of the Sunday morning worship. The new members are honored with red roses to carry throughout the service. And they come to the service already having decided to make a serious commitment to the congregation and to the denomination. Joining carries with it the stated expectation of commitment. Their decision is made through orientation programs, which they offer throughout the year on an ongoing basis, but not continually. One orientation program is required, in that you have to participate in the program before you sign the book. By definition, participation in the orientation is part of what it means to be a member of All Souls. They also have another orientation that is encouraged that I believe, if I understand it correctly, is more focused on All Souls itself, the building, the history, not so much Unitarian Universalism. In the orientation, education is concentrated on four points: attendance, participation, generous giving, and asking when you need something. Before they sign the book, people are asked to decide, do you want to come regularly on Sunday mornings? Do you want to participate in committees, activities, the life of the church? Do you want to share your money generously with the church? Do you want to tell us when something is wrong? If the answer to any of these questions is no, then you are still welcome to participate at whatever level makes you comfortable. You don't have to sign the book. You don't have to be a member. If you do sign the book, you are making a promise. You are agreeing that you will attend, participate, give generously, and let the church know when something is wrong. What promise do we ask for when we open our book for new members to sign? How do new members know what it means to be part of Williamsburg UU? How can we tell them? How do we figure it out? The demons cannot run away or hide or go underground if we keep asking the questions. The demons can be made to work for us. When we meet together to engage these questions in a congregational retreat, we empower ourselves to be a stronger congregation and a more visible presence in our community. This brings up another vital point. Do we want to be a more visible presence in our community? Would we prefer to be underground UUs? Are we, on some level, a tiny bit ill at ease about naming ourselves Unitarian Universalist in Williamsburg? Words such as proselytize and evangelical give us the willies. I know that from conversations that I've had. And yet there are people out in the world that are proselytizing and evangelizing, and they're on our college campuses, and more they are in our high schools. And they're preaching a message of distorted Christianity, divisiveness, and condemnation that we have to acknowledge and recognize. Can we keep our good news to ourselves in the face of this pervasiveness of the religious right? What are we called to do as people of faith? Who are we called to be? And we Unitarian Universalists are people of faith. We are religious people. That's what our sign out on the street says to the world. We cherish our intellectual identity as a denomination and as an individual congregation, but we can go to graduate school for our intellects. We don't need a religious community for that. We pay such careful attention and keep good track of the people among us that need care, but other organizations can take care of us. The Commission on Appraisal says it is critical that the Unitarian Universalist Association and congregations within the UUA know their identity. That identity cannot be a club, a social action organization, or a surrogate family. By now I can hear you asking, well, what do we do? How do we answer these questions? First of all, remember that in the story, the answers are not what made the demons work for the master builder's son. It was the questions. So we can start by asking the questions in a congregation-wide retreat to which you will all be invited this winter. Please come. You don't have to wait for winter, though. You can go to lunch or have coffee some morning with friends from the congregation or people you don't know from the congregation if you want to. And you can talk. Let's talk about our church. I know that some are uncomfortable with the word church and would prefer that we not use it at all. And I know that others cherish the word church and want this congregation to be identified as a church. And that's a good starting point for conversation, religious language. Another starting point is money. We can talk a lot about money. And another starting point is, where do our fears lie? Let's name what makes us anxious. It takes courage, it takes hard hats and life jackets to ask and answer and explore questions like these. But if we ask them, we make the demons say their names and work for us. So watch for more information as the fall goes on about a congregational retreat, and please plan to participate and bring your questions. Let me offer a specific, personal, microcosmic example of the need for an identity. A while ago, I agreed to facilitate a particular group in my own congregation. There were two other facilitators for two other groups. We all worked together with our minister throughout the summer, training, reading background information, planning, organizing. When we began our groups in the fall, we had a clear idea of the purpose of our program, and we had written and published thorough, detailed explanations all through the summer to be sent out to the congregation. My level of frustration grew week after week as people came to my group saying, here's what I want to do. Why do we have to do that? I don't think that's going to meet my needs. I prefer to do it another way. There seemed to be no understanding that the groups had a meaning, a purpose, and an identity already established before the first meeting ever took place. One day I was telling my story of frustration to Reverend Janet Newman, who was the interim minister before Reverend Shirley. And she offered me this metaphor that has been so useful to me. I've used it many times since then. Sounds like when you get on the plane, she said, and somebody from the crew makes that announcement. This plane is going to Atlanta. If Atlanta is not your destination, you're on the wrong plane. You don't have to get off the plane. You're welcome to fly. Put your seat back in the resting position. Stow your luggage in the overhead compartment and eat the free peanuts. But here's what you need to know. When we land, we're going to be in Atlanta. If you don't want to be in Atlanta, you need to figure out what you do want to do. But we're telling you in the beginning, this plane is going to Atlanta. As a denomination, as an individual congregation, where is our plane going? Do we know? Do we know how important it is to figure that out? Can we really say, come on, get on the plane, we're not going anywhere, let's fly all around and we'll talk about it. Being among thousands of UUs at GA this summer, listening to the stories of their congregation's struggles and triumphs, and listening to individuals' own stories makes it clear that we have the potential to be a powerful force for good in this world. How will we be that force? How will we make the best use of our potential, rather than reinventing the wheel over and over again in our own inward-focused circles? This is what the Commission on Appraisal says. This is a quote. "The Commission on Appraisal does not see this report as the end of a process. Rather, we hope it will be a beginning. We've raised the issue and asked many questions. Now it's time for all of us to engage collectively, thoughtfully, respectfully in the challenging process of searching for answers. What could our UU faith be like if our congregations truly became the safe and welcoming place we aspire to create? If we truly did honor and celebrate both our theological diversity and our source of unity. If we were willing to commit to spiritual discipline as well as spiritual freedom." And here's another quote. "Whether we now have the seeds of a liberating faith is not really a question. Deluding ourselves into thinking that admiring the seeds will make them grow is the issue at hand," writes a contemporary UU prophet. "What marvels might be possible if we took these seeds and planted and tended them? What wondrous blooms might arise? Let's find out." And so may it be.